Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 10, Rapture, teleplay by Hans Beimler and directed by Jonathan West. Rapture aired on December 30th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, on the eve of Bajor's entry into the Federation, Sisko locates the ruins of the ancient lost city of Bahala on Bajor, thanks to visions. As these visions that are guiding him grow more potentially fatal, Sisko must choose between faith and his life.
That is so dramatic.
I mean, it is, right? What's more important to us? What's our calling, right? And I think... We're not starting this episode the way we normally start every episode. I'm just geeked up to talk about this episode.
That's fine.
But the idea of Sisko's two identities or two callings being in conflict, mm-hmm. you know, kind of the Starfleet captain and his mission, and then the idea of his role as emissary to the prophets and his growing acceptance of that role, it's so good to mine for drama.
Yes.
Making a bit of a U-turn will... almost start this episode the way we start every other episode. Elise, did you or did you not remember this one?
I did not remember this episode at all.
No?
Nope.
Nice. I probably should have asked this question before we started recording.
That's okay. Just
We'll still continue our, like, not talking about future events potentially really as we record this, because I feel like this is a hard one to basically not do it. So, like,
yes.
Okay.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. And I thought about that as
well. Cool. When I rewatched the episode for the first time, I excitedly texted you that the first contact uniforms have arrived.
Yes. Rewatched this episode a week or so ago and didn't even notice that because I'm the worst. But I obviously realized after you pointed it out and I watched it again. I'm the worst.
Yeah.
My brain is
so
like,
obviously mush. This episode obviously aired after First Contact was released in theaters, where they had the new kind of black and gray uniforms. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they knew what those uniforms were going to be when Season 5 went into production, but they didn't want to, like, you know, First Contact hadn't aired yet, and that was the movie. So it got priority there. What's also kind of like, again, we're Trekkies, we like to nitpick. Sisko's jacket doesn't fit properly in this episode, and I think the next ones too. So the comm badge placement is incorrect. It's more like on the gray kind of shoulder piece and not kind of like the black lower one. So it just looks kind of goofy when you know how it's supposed to fit, but I think they get the tailoring right. Not next episode, but by the episode
they hired Garrick to take care of it, I assume.
Totally right, totally. And then, yeah, obviously, as folks will remember, Voyager is currently airing at this time as well, but they keep the previous uniforms.
They don't have access to the new uniforms.
They don't have the new patterns. They're stuck in the Delta Quadrant. Yeah. So.
I was really excited for the premise of this episode because I love a prophecy and trying to find a lost city. Like, that is like, I love Romancing the Stone. I love the movie The Lost City, the Sandra Bullock movie that came out a couple years ago. They're so much fun. So this felt like that to me, and it did not disappoint.
And there's a healthy dose and like a direct homage of Close Encounters of a First Kind in this as well.
Yeah, right? I could see that.
The idea of that obsessive nature after that event and like seeking and finding, and like, you know, in Close Encounters, Dreyfus's character does the mashed potato version of like that mesa that they end up finding in the final. And then the direct homage in that is Sisko making the spire of Bahala with, I can't remember what kind of food he's using, but it's
yeah, whatever the dinner that they're having that is.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that, but that is totally apt. Like, I really see that now that you're mentioning it. One thing I thought was really interesting when I was looking up this episode is that, in general, I was reading that episodes relating to Bajor and their religion aren't, like, that popular among fans. But this one was, like, a different situation and actually got a pretty good reception. And I was laughing because those are always episodes you and I seem really happy to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so interesting to me because, like, I think this is one of the things that, like, makes Deep Space Nine as kind of, like, enduring as it is in the way it kind of, I think, not that the other 90s shows don't hold up, but, like, this one kind of represents, is a lot closer to how television is made and written now than some of the other stuff, or was at least in the right. 2000s, like, obviously. Strange New World is doing kind of, like, the classic Star Trek format, but... Yeah, this is, like, the meat and potato stuff I really like that's interesting, and it's wild to me that people didn't respond to it as much earlier on.
Yeah.
Right? Like, as it was contemporary to it airing, and there's a reflective essay in there. right?
I won't about make you write it.
Zeitgeist. No, and I don't know if there'd be enough sources, but it's just, like, I wonder if there's, like, that analytical nature of the whole, like, you know, idea of that whole, like, Fukuyama end of history thing in the 90s and, like, you know, considering itself kind of the zenith of the modernist project and, like, evolving beyond religion and then having the kind of, like, the snapback that we've had, or the idea of, like, the way the, you know, I guess as the religious right kind of got more power, like, of course, 10 years before this with Reagan, but then, you know, to the point of, like, you know, shortly after this, there's an evangelical in the White House in Bush 2. And, like, yeah. No, there's just all my... TLDR, this episode is my shit.
I love that. One of my favorite bits of this episode, and actually I think any episode where the Bajoran religions pop up, is they always have, like... It's almost like they poll the rest of the crew on, like, what they think about it. Because, like, Dax, O'Brien, and Odo are usually very, like, logical and, like, you know, especially Dax is very science-brained.
Mm-hmm.
And then yeah. There's, like, Worf yeah. and Kira who are, like, come from traditions of there being, like, legends and prophecies and stuff. And they're more, obviously Kira is Bajoran, but, like, Worf is more inclined yeah. to believe in this because he has his own beliefs that are... Not yeah. necessarily similar, but, like, a little, what we would call fantastical, I guess.
It's open to spirituality. Why can't I not say that word
spirituality?
Today? Spirituality.
I just said it just to yeah, be like, I can say it, you can't. I'm definitely more like Dax, but in my Star Trek, I totally love, like in my real life, I would be like Dax. But in yeah. this, like... Well, he's the emissary. Like, I believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like...
Sorry.
No, I'm just thinking this is an interesting dichotomy. And even, like, the way you phrase it, it's like, yeah, you're, like, you know, more science-coded in, like, real life. But, like, you like this mining this for drama. And it's, like, innately, like, my inclination and, like, you know, where I am in, like, my own journey and things like that is it's, like, probably not, but what if... Right? Like, so it's not, like, completely ignoring of science, but it's, like, there are more things conceived in heaven and earth ratio than can conceived in your philosophy. Like, a little bit of that. It's, like, why not? Like, life would be boring if not for this kind of, like, you know, color and flavor and, like, whatever. But then, that's easy to say, but then at the same time, you see that there are very real-world consequences, and it's not just, like, a capital R romantic, like... notion, like, yeah. is mentioned kind of in Hamlet that I just butchered the quote where it's like...
Well, I wouldn't have known because I don't know from Hamlet.
So. In this case, and, like, in this case, it's like Sisko's life is the very real consequence. There are I say geopolitical, intergalactic political ramifications.
Planetary. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
Planetary, intergalactic, intergalactic, planetary, planetary, intergalactic politics.
I was going to say, lastly, before we get into the main story, one thing that I found really amusing when looking up information on this episode was that the vision with the locusts that Sisko has is not just a reference to the Bible, but apparently there was an episode idea about locusts coming to Bajor that never got made. So it's just like an inside joke, like within the writing staff. I thought that was really funny.
It's actually a reference to Jurassic World Dominion.
Oh, they were foreshadowing that movie?
Yeah, unfortunately. I shouldn't say unfortunately. I haven't actually seen it yet. I just know the locust.
I'm going to just real quick, because like, I'm reading The Lost World right now, and I love Jurassic Park. Jurassic World was fine. The second Jurassic World movie was god-awful. That's the one where like they killed a lot of the animals, and I hated it. But Jurassic World Dominion, is that the last one?
Yeah. Well, for now, I think they're making a new one with ScarJo or something. Yeah, fair.
That was the most recent one. I'll phrase it that way. Yeah. I didn't hate it. The like Sam Neill and Laura Dern nostalgia really worked on me. Like, it's not a good movie, but I didn't think it was as bad as everyone said. Like, I had a fun time, and I probably watched it on a plane, so it was appropriate.
No, that's fair. The thing with like Fallen Kingdom or the second one is it's like it's like two movies in one. So you have like this disaster with the volcano in the first half, and then like the Gothic Castle auction stuff, which like I liked the Gothic Castle action stuff, but
you're right.
Just the weird.
I just didn't like human cloning. Oh, I guess dinosaurs are in our backyard now. Like what?
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, so, back to locusts.
So this episode was really just one big plot. But I did want to call out some of like the Sisko Cassidy stuff before we got into the main plot of the episode. Last saw her, Cassidy was going to jail for 6 months for working with the Maquis. So she's returning, and like we haven't really heard about her in the meantime. Jake is really excited for her to return. I mean, we may remember like Jake is the one that set them up. But I think Jake is really like, Cassidy made you really happy, Dad. Like, what's going to happen? And like, we don't know what Sisko's been thinking about Cassidy either. You know, he hasn't told us. But I do really like the scene where she comes into the Hollow Suite where he is, and he just like kisses her immediately, and I'm just like, oh, they still love each other. It made me really happy. He left her quarters exactly as she left them. That's like so special.
Well, and like I think too that like the idea of like Cassidy even coming back like this is just another like indicator of like how DS9's kind of approaching things.
Yeah, we just wouldn't have seen her again if it was a TNG character. I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even if we had had previous kind of episodes, like the little mini arc before,
they just get a new girlfriend or something.
But I guess. Sorry. Yeah, no, totally right. But hey, like, I guess the penal system works in the future because you can just do your jail sentence and just go back to your life, like, no problem. So, like, even though prisons should probably be abolished in the future.
Yeah, they don't, like, make it so you can't be employed again.
Go back to your life. Right?
But I also really enjoyed the scene at the... Because there's a bunch of scenes where, like, Cassidy is kind of yelling at Sisko because he's putting this vision quest, I'll call it, ahead of his life. And she's like, you're not going to see your son grow up. Which part of me was like, I wonder if that would be, like, if he, like, did go on his little quest, if that would be, like, it made me think of the episode where Jake's older and, like, his dad died and, like, he has to save him and all that. The Visitor. And I like the scene at the end where, like, Jake, Sisko, and Cassidy are all, like, joined hands. Like, they truly feel like a family to me.
Totally. Totally.
So just to give some background, there is a painting of the lost city of Bahala that the Cardassians had been, like, they were apparently supposed to return, like, a while ago, but they finally decided to return it to Bajor. And because Sisko's the emissary, he's like, I get to hang on to this for, like, a day before it gets returned. It kind of, I just, like, had visions of, like, that scene in Glass Onion with the Mona Lisa. thankfully, it didn't have the same fate. But yeah, so he has the picture or the painting scanned into the computer because he's fascinated by it and he wants to learn more. And Kira tells him that there's a prophecy that only a person who's been touched by the prophets can find the lost city. And we know that Sisko has been touched by the prophets. So it seems like he might be the person to figure this out.
Dun, dun, dun. What I think to the idea of, like, Sisko becomes somewhat, I guess, obsessed or hyper-fixated.
Yes.
It starts with as a hyper-fixation. and then it, I think, does turn into a bit of more of, like, an obsession. But when it comes to, you know, the aforementioned visions and everything else, those don't start in earnest until after, you know, the OSHA incident in the Hollow Suite where he gets zapped, right? So there's this whole question of faith, I guess, like running throughout the bulk of, like, the episode, whereas it's like, are these actual, like, because there's no orb shenanigans in this episode. There's not an orb of archaeology that Sisko's consulting. So, like, there's that whole theme of, like, are these actual visions from the prophets? Or is this just a coincidence that he managed to find it after getting his brain zapped by Quark's broken Hollow Suite, right? I think that's just, like, such an interesting question that then gets really murky. Because it actually ends up being, like, air quotes, right? Like, he finds Valhalla because of these, right?
It's so wild. Like, he's so obsessive. Like, Cassidy just shows up and he's like, come look for this lost city with me. And I'm just like, if I were her, I'd be like, sure, I'll go with you. But also, like, let's talk about our relationship, please.
Yeah.
And it's great that all of this is happening. All of this happening coincides with, like, Admiral Whatley calling and being like, hey, Bajor's finally going to join the Federation. And, like, everyone on the station is celebrating.
Yeah.
Dax is super happy for a party. I do want to point out Kira's still very pregnant. I do, like, as you said when we were talking about, you know, initial thoughts, like, I'd love the emissary finding Valhalla, which sounds so close to Valhalla, by the way, at the same time as, like, Sisko's mission is basically working out, you know? That is his mission there, to have Bajor join the Federation. And it's this whole thing that's happening with Sisko disrupts that entirely. yeah, every time I say Bahala, I think of saying Valhalla. There's a lot of people interrupting Sisko and his visions in this episode. Like, Kira interrupts him because he's basically catatonic in the Hollow Suite. Mm-hmm. And he was, like, mid-vision. And he said that the vision was going to help him understand the connection between the orbs, the occupation of Bajor, the wormhole, the Dominion call. War. I don't know why I said the word call. The Dominion War. And Kira calls this a Pak Temphar, which is a sacred vision. And it just sounds wild. I do kind of wish that we got to see what the vision was a little bit. But I'm sure that would have been expensive.
Too expensive.
Yeah. And, like, obviously we don't get the Locust vision either. So yeah, everyone's coming to the station. Kai wins there because obviously she's going to be involved in the Bajor joins the Federation stuff. But I do think it's really interesting also, like from a being the captain and being head of the station, it's very unusual that Sisko wouldn't be there to greet Kai Wynn. I found that to be like, that would be part of his role, you know? And that's just further proof that he's become kind of hyperfixated and obsessed. The Kai is still really sus about about Bajor joining the Federation. She's like, we've only had 5 years to recover from the occupation. You know, she's worried that they're going to lose their freedom. Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to hear Kira and her discuss that, because obviously Kira's tune was very different 5 years ago.
Yeah. I like that the episode calls that out, too, right? Like, instead of her just, like, unacknowledging. Like, I like that it's acknowledged, I guess.
So Sisko and Cassidy leave, and they actually do find Bahala based on his visions and the spire. And they find the spire. And I do think it's important that they showed us the spire in the Hollow Suite versus just showing it to us in the painting. Because it, for me, it was more effective when they finally did see it to be like, oh, that is the same as the other thing. I think if it was just the painting, it wouldn't have. Yeah, if it was just the painting, it might not have been as, like, emotional or impactful.
Well, and plus it was an easier sell to make the thing.
Yes, for exactly. That's funny. I do think that because of all of this, Kai Wynn finally does believe that Sisko is the emissary. Like, she's like, no one else would have found this. I do like the conversation she has with Kira, like the other conversation she has with Kira about, basically, Kira kind of, I mean, I don't think Kira meant it as like an insult, but I do think that that Kai Wynn took this kind of negging. She was like, oh, it's really courageous to admit when you're wrong, because Kai Wynn was kind of like not into Sisko, you know? And I do appreciate that Kai Wynn is like, I know, like, she feels like people that were in the resistance are kind of think that they won the war and, like, overturned the occupation single-handedly. She's like, just because you had your weapons doesn't mean the rest of us weren't doing, like, other things. She reminds Kira that she was in a Cardassian prison camp for 5 years, and she had no weapons. She just had her faith. Mm-hmm. And she remembers every time she was beat. Like, it hasn't left her. And I think that Kai Wynn was, I mean, I don't like Kai Wynn, but I think she was right to tell Kira this, because Kira, like, seems really shocked that she was, like, would be courageous or would, like, admit she was wrong. And she's like, there's a whole part of my life that you only know me as a political figure, like, a religious leader. You don't know me personally to know, like, what I've gone through.
This episode's so good. It's just, and even, like, the idea of, like, you know, going through that theme of, like, faith and, like, the power of faith and, like, everything else, it's like it makes strange bedfellows, right? Like, in terms of, like, Sisko,
I know they're like the teammates Kai, like, in this episode basically,
team up, right?
So Admiral Whatley actually shows up at Bahala and is, like, quite annoyed that Sisko's, like, doing this instead of greeting people for the ceremony of Bajor joining the Federation. Like, you have, like, important people coming to the station for the ceremony, and you're busy doing this instead. Like, the Admiral does not understand and thinks that there's something medically wrong with Sisko. And he orders him to, like, get checked out. And, like, obviously Bashir's like, I checked him out before he left, you know? And but I do think, like, the visions are giving Sisko, like, those bad headaches, and it's just not, it's not healthy. And I do wonder if part of that is because he's human. Like, I wonder if someone who was Bajoran, like, if they were having those kind of visions, if their body would be able to handle it better. Kind of just a side note of something I was thinking about.
I mean, that again, maybe, but then that would go back to, like, are the visions real?
A mental disorder?
Is it, like, the zapping, right? Like, yeah.
Is it real? Right? Is it like, because you got zapped in so that hollow suite, or are you just having, like, a mental breakdown? I will say that the swarm of locusts hovering, like, over Bahala, which left and headed toward Cardassia, sounds like the most Passover-related vision I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like combining a couple plagues together, but it's
the
definitely
locust
like
passed plague over coding, right? Bahala. So basically, Cisco really does need surgery to correct this brain activity situation, but he's refusing to because he wants to figure out all the visions, and he knows the surgery will stop that. So that's when we have Jake and Cassidy kind of just like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you are going to miss your son growing up if you do not get the surgery. And Kaiwyn just is like, come on, buddy, let's go take a walk and consult with the orb. And it's just so, as you were saying, it's so weird to see these two people being on the same side. Like, it feels completely unnatural to me. But I do think that the scene is just heartbreaking because you know Cassidy and Jake only want the best for him, and he's just like one track mind for this.
I'm a man with a one track mind, so much to do in one lifetime.
That I wrote, I already talked about, so I'm not going to mention this. Like, that's done. This is where shit kind of blows up, actually. Figuratively, nothing actually blew up, like literally, but they're ready to go with the signing. Bajor's going to join the Federation, and Cisco just like busts into the ceremony saying that Bajor should not join the Federation right now. And like, these visions are risking his entire career. Like, this goes against what he's supposed to be doing there. And it just is scary. He has like this seizure, and it's just not good. The Admiral is furious. He's, like, demanding Bashir do this operation. And Bashir is like, I can't do it without permission from Jake. And Jake's like, please do this.
I mean, Bashir's, like, right on, though. Like, it's like, your boss can't say,
doesn't work
do the surgery. Right?
Like, For sure. And, like, when Cisco wakes up, he's so upset that the visions are gone. One thing that I found really wild, and I mean, obviously it would, like, end the show probably, but, like, I feel like if this wasn't a television show, Cisco would, like, get fired. Like, he may not, like, get fired, like, from Starfleet altogether, but I think he would lose his current position.
Reassigned.
Because he kind of went against supposed to be doing there.
His whole, like, you know, what does Picard say to him in the pilot? To do everything short of violating the Prime Directive to get Bajor into the Federation. I think that's one of those things you want to talk about, like, the political realities. It's like, I think the reason he, like, the in-universe reason there aren't more consequences that way is probably because, like, Bajor would lose their shit.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Like, I do think he is. Yeah,
but I'm sure,
like,
Starfleet wanted to.
They knew. They knew. Like, he was lucky he was the emissary, because I think if he wasn't, none of this would happen, probably. But he gets to be between two worlds, really, here. He gets to be the emissary, and he gets to, like, be Starfleet. Yeah. And it's interesting, because my roommates and I have been rewatching Star Trek Discovery. It's their first time, like, we're in season 4, and we were at the scene where, like, Navar is going to, is about to rejoin the Federation, and, well, it's
Unification
actually not
3.
That was last season. This is, like,
okay.
They met Navar again in Unification 3. This is more like, they're like,
oh, okay.
Been working together for a bit, and so they're going the president of Navar is, like, worried about losing Navar's, like, autonomy and all of this stuff, and they want to be able to leave the Federation whenever they want to. And Michael is a citizen of Navar because she grew up on Vulcan, and that is the same planet, they just have a different name now, because of unification. And so it didn't feel like the Romulans just lived on Vulcan now. So she, like, gets to be the person who is technically from Navarre and also from Starfleet, who gets to kind of be the best person to deal with, like, mediating this, because she has devotion to both things and is trusted by both groups. And it feels very similar to this, because Sisko's the emissary. I mean, obviously he's not of Bajor, but the emissary is related and important to Bajor. And it just felt really similar, actually.
Two worlds, one family. Trust in your heart.
I would say I'm convinced. I do think that Sisko is the emissary. I don't know that I fully, like, cared about it before now, but now I'm convinced.
What convinces you? What?
I don't know. I think in this instance, I'm like with Kira. I'm like, all of this happened, and I don't know. I think I let logic leave me a little bit, which I think is fine once in a while.
Hell yeah. So it'll be interesting in the coming seasons and episodes to see, like, what happens, right? Because, like, in some ways, like, this episode kind of, like, low-key tilts the whole arc of the show right? Because, like, Sisko just fucked up where the show is supposed to eventually go and end.
Yeah, right? Totally. Like, so, like, what happens now?
Another suitcase and another
where
home.
Am I going to?
You'll get by, you always have before.
Sorry, I don't want to sing too much because my voice sucks. But I was like, I love that song.
I don't think your voice sucks.
I appreciate that. I think that I should have rephrased that to say I don't think I could hit the note that is needed for that song.
But you're not singing too.
But
music.
Also,
you're
I like didn't remember all the words, so I just kind of like let it trail off. I know it ends with like, don't ask something something. I can't remember. This has been Andrew Lloyd Webber Corner, apparently.
Hello. Buenos Aires.
That is, I will admit, to being one of two vinyls that I've, like, stolen from my parents' house that I don't think I'm ever giving back to them. Evita is
nice.
Very important. It's great. Original Broadway soundtrack.
Oh, what a circus. Oh, what a show.
The curtain down. Don't cry for me,
Bahala. Yeah, Melissa, feel free to edit some or all of this out.
Don't cry for me, Bahala.
There we go.
The truth is I never left you. All through my wild... All right, I really need to stop.
All through my wild days, through Starfleet's existence... I kept
Don't
my
keep
promise.
Your I have Don't heard from friends of ours that they enjoy when we sing, so I'm not saying that we need to cut it. Melissa, we trust your judgment.
All right. Was there anything else you wanted to say on the bulk of the episode before we pivot to our regularly scheduled segments?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in the context of Star Trek in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, ordered by Dr. McCoy. Also a possible reference to Alta from Altair IV in the film Forbidden Planet. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I just think Sisko's, like, reaction to Cassidy showing up and just, like, immediately making out with her was really hot and, like, He clearly craved her while she was gone, and I think that's lovely.
I wonder if they, like,
I was wondering that, too, because I don't think that we saw any of that, but, like, if you don't see someone for 6 months and you just, like, start making out, like, there had to have been a conversation, I feel like. Unless, like, it just came over them. Good thing they both felt the same way, I guess. It's funny, like, I think when I was younger, I would have just been like, oh, that's perfect, and now as, like, an adult... I'm just like I'm probably around like Sisko's age, you know? I'm just like, I hope they like had a conversation about this and like he just didn't like throw himself at her. I'm ruining the thirst by talking about that. Did you have anything different?
No, not particularly this week.
Fair.
No, I'm just always horny for exegesis.
I'm horny for Kira's pregnancy to be over. The uniform she wears, like her maternity uniform, I think is really ugly. Sorry.
Well, especially
looks
now
like she's
that,
wearing like a house. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say, especially now that like Nana in real life,
yeah,
like, is now here, their son is now here on Earth, and like, I mean, I get it. Like, your body's recovering or whatever.
No, like, I'm not saying, like, put her back in the same, like, cat suit or whatever. But there could be, like, a... I mean, she hasn't given birth in the show, so...
Yeah. All right. So now it's time for the most Star Trek thing. Elise, what's your candidate for
most Star Trek? It's just Quark getting arrested for something silly and trying to pawn off blame on someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think mine... Okay, mine's a bit of a fake one. Because like I know I have future knowledge, but like assuming this is just another episode of Star Trek, we have this big prophecy that's supposed to turn the world on its axis that never gets referenced again. We'll see if that actually holds true or not. Elise, until next time, where can folks find
you
more of you?
You can find me on Blue Sky Letterboxd and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's TENDI. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you can find me on Letterboxd and Blue Sky as well at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together on Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer
Bye.
And program. Bye.